Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Pastor, good afternoon to you. Happy Friday.
Hey, man. Good afternoon, my elder. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, Pastor. How are you doing?
No, all is well. I missed you yesterday.
Hey, man. You know, sometimes this life happens. We're here back and healthy, back in full force. And thank you so much for joining us once again. Now, I want us to go towards a wrap-up of our conversation without getting into a lot of pleasantries. We've discussed the life of Christ, we've discussed the death, and that's not how the story ends. I want to conclude about what happens then next. And always, everyone looks forward to that part in the movie, you know, for those who watch movies where the good guys stand up and slay the villain. But tell us about the resurrection of Christ. Did this actually happen? All right, we lost the pastor there a little bit. Let's see. Pastor, can you hear me now?
Yes, yes, better.
All right, great. Now, I just want to say, we talk about the resurrection now, which is, you know, this is where now the good guy stands up and it finishes off the villain, etc., etc., appealing those who are actually enjoying movies, etc. Yeah. But here we have, what happens then next? Because he says, I'm going to build this tent, destroy and build it and rebuild in 3 days. Did he actually resurrect?
Man, you know, it's a very interesting question that you're asking, because as much as we want to focus on the event that happens on that Sunday morning, and I think it's a beautiful event that takes place on the Sunday morning, right? The issue that I have is that we miss in John 10 when he says he is the resurrection and life. So, because by the time we arrive in chapter 20-21, right, of John, we're too late. We've missed the point completely. When he says I'm the resurrection and life, he's saying a lot of important things there.
Number one,
he's talking about the event before the event happens. And it is not a suggestion that maybe it's going to happen. He's talking in terms of guarantees. There are times when things are meant to happen in our lives and we miss them completely because we doubt the power of the guarantee that we have been given. He gives a guarantee that I am definitely going to resurrect on that day when the time comes. So the important part of whether or not it happened is actually in the prophecy that he gives before it actually takes place.
Okay,
that
right.
I am the resurrection and life.
Tell me, so this resurrection, some suggest that no, actually this was a spiritual resurrection as opposed to a physical reaction, because no one dead comes back to life. Was it a physical resurrection, as some suggest?
Man, you know, when you study the text closely, it tells you that that for the death to happen, there was an earthquake. Nature responded when the death was happening. Nature also responded on the Sunday morning. I don't know if the people who are claiming that the resurrection didn't take place, how are they accounting for the response of nature when that place is not in the belt of earthquakes and all those things. The Palestine is nowhere close to earthquakes and those natural disasters and all of that. There's nowhere close to that. So for them to then claim that there was a natural disaster during that funeral, and then there was a natural disaster 2 days later, and it was the same phenomenon or the same natural disaster of an earthquake. Man, I really want to see how they argue that point. But let's put that aside. If we were able to prove 2 days back that the death was a real death, we were able to prove biologically and otherwise that the death was a real death, then we don't have the burden of proof for resurrection, because the burden of proof was actually at death.
Yeah. All right. Very interesting. Now, so he resurrects, and give us a bit of detail there so that we can give credence to this story. So who saw this thing happen?
So the ladies are the ones who are first going towards the tomb, because the tomb, I mean, the tradition was that they needed to embalm the body with spices and so forth for whatever the tradition was. Now, I think the important thing here to note, maybe let me take a step back and note that Joseph took a risk when he put Christ in his tomb. Remember, we spoke about the fact that Christ actually did not have a tomb.
He didn't have
the certificate that points to where he must be buried. So Joseph, knowing this, he takes a risk and he buries Christ in his tomb. So for that weekend, Joseph had no place to be buried. If he had died that weekend, then they were going to have a problem.
Yeah.
That where are we going to bury Joseph?
Mm-hmm.
Because actually his tomb is now occupied. So he takes a risk. The reason why he takes a risk is because Christ has been saying this time and time again, guys, on Sunday I will be up. Don't worry about my death. Worry about my resurrection, because when the time comes, I am going to resurrect. And when I do resurrect, it will be for the purpose, not only for my own purpose, but it will be for the benefit of you who must also taste death.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are going to taste death, Joseph looks at this and he says, peradventure, if he goes into my tomb, when he comes out, the day I go into my tomb, I have a guarantee that I will also come out. So for Joseph, there are guarantees that are put in place. By the time the morning of the Sunday morning comes, and there is an earthquake, and the stone is rolled away, and the angel says to him, Jesus, your father is calling you. By the time all of those events take place, the ladies were on their way to the tomb, but they did not perceive that the event that Christ had said he will be in, or he will be part of, or he will be driving, is actually taking place while they are on their way to the tomb. They arrive at the tomb, and the prophecy is fulfilled. Christ has risen, and they don't know what to do because the tomb is empty. There's a man who is sitting there by the tomb, and he's asking them, why do you look for the living among the dead? I mean, that question is a very important question, because some of us are looking for the living among the dead. Our situations are living, yet we are doubtful. We are continually killing the blessings that are being brought towards us. We're looking for the living among the dead. We don't see that our situations have been brought alive through the prayers of our parents, through the prayers of our pastors, through the prayers of those who love us, through the prayers that we ourselves have prayed. Our situations have come to life and we can't even see it. We're even doubting a situation that is clear in front of us, that this situation is alive completely.
Now, tell me, Pastor, what would be the significance then of these women being the first ones to receive the news that he had risen? I mean, taking into account that they were not part of the inner circle, the 12, yeah, as it were.
Yeah.
Is that of any significance or just a coincidence?
Remember that the woman in prophetic terms is the church.
Mm.
And the chosen guys, right, the 12, have decided not to believe the prophecy. Because I mentioned this earlier in the week, that
yep,
Amos 3:7 says, the sovereign Lord does nothing without revealing his plans to his servants, the prophets. He told them that he is coming, and they chose not to believe him. So now it was time for the church to see, I mean, that he will resurrect, and they chose not to believe him. Now it's time for the church to see for themselves that he has resurrected. And so the church needed to see the physical thing, the actual thing taking place. There are times in our church experience where God must manifest himself practically,
mm-hmm,
among us, because as leaders we may not be able to perceive or even to acknowledge the moving of God's presence. I was talking to a friend this morning,
mm,
and she was asking me about an incident that she heard about, where I was preaching and a young girl began to manifest demon possession, mm, and so forth.
Mm.
And she was asking, because the report that she received was, hey, the pastor just spoke one word and the demons left immediately. So she was asking what happened. And I said to her, no, that's not an accurate account.
Mm-hmm.
I actually fought with those demons for about 45 minutes or so.
Mm.
And then they left. But you see, that is when you believe as a leader that the power that has been given,
mm,
is the power that is usable immediately now. Those guys did not believe that Christ is going to resurrect immediately now. They thought what he was saying was going to happen maybe never.
Yeah.
Yet the church itself went and saw literally the Christ who is resurrected.
Beautiful, beautiful. Now, you know, it seems as though this story of resurrection is such a critical story. I mean, but one writer says, if Christ is not risen, then in my language, I don't know if you're not going to understand, Xhosa, let me leave it there because I may confuse you.
Talk to me. Give me a bit of Xhosa.
Guess Xhosa city, mawachithwele amanzi ayikho lenkukhu. So in my language, if Christ is not risen, maswachithwele amanzi ayikho lenkukhu. Meaning that, well, there's no point of, in fact, let's just close shop. I mean,
let's pack shop, yeah.
Can we be as brave as that to the extent that how we vouch for it is that if indeed he is not risen, then we might as well just go home.
You know, a good friend of mine, Pastor Mudir, says to me one day, he says, miracles are not for believers. Miracles are meant for non-believers so that they may believe. If a believer experiences a miracle,
mm-hmm,
the believer will want more miracles and then become entitled to the miracle.
Yep.
And then the day the miracle doesn't happen, the believer will walk away. So miracles are not meant for believers. Miracles are meant for non-believers so that non-believers may be able to believe. So when we're tackling the issue of whether or not we believe that this is a reality, then it means actually we fall under non-believers. We need to see a miracle so that that miracle can convince us to be able to believe.
Mm.
And then we can come back to being believers. And when we are believers, we will not experience miracles, because miracles will not... You see, faith,
mm,
is strengthened by challenges.
Yeah.
When
yeah,
you're going through challenges, then your faith become strong, because that is the time when you are testing something. You see, when they do product testing, they take it through rigorous and vigorous activities so that they can see the quality and the strength of that product. It's the same thing with faith. When you are testing faith, you have to put it through difficult circumstances and difficult situations so that when the storm has passed, you know that I have no doubt that I was under the wings of him who has promised to keep me alive and to be with me through the storm. He said he will walk with me in the water. He said he will walk with me in the fire. He said when I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, he will be there with me. So that's all that I need. Actually, that's an even bigger miracle for me to be able to experience the presence of God in my life when no one else is able to perceive it. And then when I come out on the other side, there's a testimony that, remember when I was going through my divorce, the Lord walked with me. Remember when I was going through bereavement, the Lord was with me. Remember when I was going through a difficult time at work, the Lord was with me. No one was able to see, but I received the strength from the Lord himself. Then I was able to walk through the valley of the shadow of death. As I come out on the other side and I sit at a table, at the table that is prepared for me, in the presence of my enemies, people who did not want me to make it through this time, it was because, it still is because, the Lord was with me.
Oh, man. Now, let's come to, Christ is risen, and the women who were going to be embalming him there don't find him. And they're told that, well, don't look for the one who lives among the dead. And so they go back to tell the news, etc. And the rest of the story unfolds. Now, there's a fellow, a very interesting fellow, who then meets Christ post resurrection, and he says, "No, man, it can't be. Nah, it can't be." But listen, he says, "No, listen. It's fine. I understand you claim to be Jesus, and it's all right. But we've got to just prove this beyond reasonable doubt." Talk to us about this, because the man, rightfully so, I mean, he has never seen anybody goes to death and coming back alive. And so here is the man now, and he's thinking about ghosts and all of that, I imagine, in his mind. And he says, no, if this thing is real, let me actually just touch and see and poke in holes where the holes were made, etc. And there's a verse somewhere that blessed are those who believe and yet have not. Please talk to us about that, because I think this becomes important.
You know, I call that guy TD. Fortunately, the Jakester falls away. he's a doubting Thomas, that guy. You know. Here's the issue with what was going on there. The first problem is that when he doubts, he is doubting from a position of self-doubt. It is not from a position of doubting God. He's looking at himself and he's saying, this guy, as far as I know, he's human 100%. And so he looks at himself, he says, if I can't resurrect myself, why is it that this guy can resurrect himself? Let me tell you why I'm saying that. You know, he was there when the young man at Nain was resurrected. The procession coming from going to the graveyard, and the young man was resurrected. The only son, the only son meeting the only son, and the only son begotten son, resurrecting the begotten, the only begotten. I wish I had some time, man. the only son resurrecting the only son.
Yeah.
You know? But when they went to Jairus's house and they were disturbed by the woman with the issue of the blood, TD was there as well, man. He went with them to Jairus's house, and there even the young girl was resurrected.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't only that place.
Mm-hmm.
When they were in exile, in a mini exile outside of Jerusalem, they received a message that Lazarus, a guy they all loved so much, had now died.
Yeah.
And then they stayed 4 days. And after 4 days, they go and they resurrect Lazarus. The guy had so much proof that Christ was a man who was capable. Yet, when it was supposed to be Christ to resurrect himself, he could not believe it, because he has looked, he has heard about Elisha. He has heard about the fact that Elisha was buried, and after Elisha was buried, he did not resurrect himself. Yet his bones could resurrect a dead soldier.
Yeah.
In his mind, there's no one who can resurrect himself. And because he looks at himself, he says, Elijah was a man.
Yeah.
I am a man. This guy is a man. There's no way that this guy can resurrect himself. So the doubt was with TD. It was not with Christ. It was not that he doubted Christ. He was doubting himself. And he looked at himself. He said, if I can't do it, there's no way this man can do it. So he says, I want to prove that this is really you. And then he looks around. I don't know why he did not see the scars on the face,
mm-hmm.
the scars on the head of the crown of thorns. I don't know why he did not see the scars. Maybe because he was dressed on his back and on his, or the scars of the lashes on the arms and so forth. I don't know why he doesn't see the torment and the torture that Christ was put through. Yet when he comes closer, he looks at the hands of Christ. He examines the hands of Christ. He takes his finger and he pokes into the hands of Christ. And there a miracle begins to happen.
Mm.
He realizes that there is love. There is love beyond measure. There is love beyond comprehension. There is love beyond my doubt. There is, I'm just coming from a soccer match, from my nephew's soccer match.
Mm-hmm.
And they had been losing the games. They lost one game before I got there. They lost another game just after I arrived there.
Mm-hmm.
And then my friend who I went there with, that my nephew is very close to as well, he then went into Rev on the third game. Now, when before that, we could see that the young men were intimidated. These are 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds. They were intimidated by the referee. They were intimidated by other coaches. They were intimidated by other players. As soon as my friend walked onto the pitch to be the referee for that game, the boys had so much confidence. The boys... game changed. They actually won the game 2-1.
Mm.
Because the understanding is this: when you can see that there is someone in your corner,
mm.
when you can see that there's someone who loves you, when you can see the love in action of the person who has said they love you, then everything changes.
Mm.
Everything changed. Another friend was saying to me the other day that when a man is loved correctly by his mother, you will see the confidence in the way that he loves his wife. The confidence is there because the love has been done correctly. So when TD puts his fingers into the hands, the palms of Christ, he realizes that I have been loved beyond my comprehension.
Beautiful. Lovely. Well, Pastor, let's wrap up this conversation with this very last question. We lose loved ones. Sir. We lose loved ones and we hear funerals every weekend. In fact, not only weekends these days, week in, week out, really. People leave us on this earth, and we say in my language, but this earth that has got a very serious thorny stones. Now, talk to us about how then should Christ's victory over death inform the way we grieve, you know, the loss of our loved ones and the way we approach death. It seems to be a very difficult and confusing, you know, a period for many, even the believers.
Even the believers, even the very elect. Look, grief is, I've learned that grief is a very difficult activity, a difficult time to go through. It is one of the most difficult. In Solusi, when I was studying in Solusi, they would tell us that you shouldn't do premarital counseling. If you yourself, as a pastor, you are not married, don't counsel anyone if you are not married. I then learned later when I got married that it was important for me to understand the challenges of married people so that I can be able to speak to those who are going into marriage, so that I can be able to relate or bring them at least to the point where they are able to understand what they are about to go through. Now, it's the same with grief. If you have never gone through grief or loss of an immediate loved one, you may not be able to understand the kind of pain that one goes through. And so somebody was saying to me, Pastor Ben Mwamba was saying to me that in Zambia, where he's coming from, they have an idiom that says, in a person who is in grief, is always right. There's nothing wrong that the person can do. Whatever that they do, they are right because they are going through grief. I found that idiom to be so profound because of that. Now, then Christ pronounces a blessing for specifically the people who are in grief. He says, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. You've got to understand this from this perspective, that there is a special blessing for those who are mourning, particularly because those who mourn, you see, God knows this very well. When he lost his only begotten son, he began to mourn his only begotten son. Oh, I wish I had time so that I can talk about how he mourned the loss of his only begotten son in Genesis. Before the son came 4,000 years later to go onto the cross, he was already mourning the loss of his son in Genesis. The whole way throughout the Old Testament, God is understanding that one day I will have to separate from this. How do I know this? Go and read Psalm 22, where David talks about the cross before the cross takes place. And he says, but I know that even though we're going to mourn, yet there will be victory after the mourning. Because blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted.
Beautiful. Well, Pastor, we're going to be going into the news literally in the next minute or so, minute and a half. But before we get to the end, as we close off this week, we're speaking about death, life, the life of Christ, the death and the resurrection. And some may have been listening, but, you know, as from when we started. Perhaps, you know, we are Africans. We believe in Mpako, you know, Patkos. What is it that the listener can take away from this message this week?
The resurrection of life, the resurrection of Christ is not limited to the event that takes place at the cross. It is not only pointing to the second coming when he will come for the second time at the appointed time. It also applies to you and I today. that because he resurrected, then there are resurrections that will take place in our lives. There are resurrections spiritually that will take place in our lives. There are financial resurrections that will take place. There are relationship resurrections that will take. There are resurrections that will take place now. We only ought to believe. We only ought to walk in faith, knowing that that resurrection represents the victory that we are having today. When we walk in the understanding of that resurrection, then we know that today when I pray and call upon the name of Jesus, covered by the blood of the Lamb, the resurrection will take place.
Beautiful. Pastor, it's been great. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Always a pleasure to talk to you, and I pray that the Lord be with you, and may He shine His countenance upon you and actually grant you blessings but that are beyond what you can get to, and that you may actually flourish in your ministry and also in your family life. Thank you so much, Pastor.
Thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate the time that was spent together. I am looking forward definitely to the next invitation. God bless.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Powerful.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.